Well, gang, great to be together. Let me welcome those of you on the north side of the street. If you're a visitor, guest over there, so grateful that you are here with us. And, of course, to my CA family on the north side, great to be with you as well. We are on week two of a series called Making Change, as you just got to see the little promo that explains a little bit about the series. We talked last week about less is more. How many of you took up the challenge to give away 100 things? Anybody take that challenge up? Yeah, it's easier to do than you would think it would be, right? I think most of us could give 10 mugs away and still have coffee, mugs for 20 people to have coffee, right? It just, there's mugs everywhere. So less is more. This week we're going to jump in and talk about stress is bad. But before we do that, I was blown away this weekend by your response to jump into financial peace. That was one of the action steps I gave you last week, and I really pressed you on that, and people put their hands up, but, you know, sometimes people put their hands up and they don't follow through. I was hoping maybe we'd have 100 people sign up. I would think if we had 100 of you sign up, that'd be amazing. We didn't have 100 sign up. We didn't have 200 sign up. We had 300 people sign up and pay the registration fee and jump in and start last Thursday. And so if you are one of those 300 people, I just want to say way to go. You've already gotten through the first session. You only have 8 more to go so that you can learn what you need to learn to have the freedom that you need to have. So way to go on that. We are on part 2 of the series where we're trying to answer this question: how do we manage our resources in a way that can honor God, that God will honor, and will actually tangibly change our life? And as we do that, it seems fitting for us to give you a little bit of a financial update. Once a year, we do a financial update. It's part of a kind of church business meeting. So you are in the shortest church business meeting on record. We're about to do it in about 5 minutes. I want to tell you a little bit about how finances are handled here at Christian Assembly. First question I get is, how is Christian Assembly funded? Everything we do here is 100% funded by your giving. People ask me sometimes, they say, well, Tom, but doesn't Christian Assembly have an endowment? We don't have an endowment. Someone asked me, they were new to faith, they hadn't ever been around church, didn't know how church worked, and they said, we've got a lot of great ministries going on. Doesn't the federal or state government give you money to run those things? No, that they take money. That's how the government works. They don't give money, right? And so the federal and state government don't give us any money for anything that we do. It all is just free will offerings by your generosity. We have a number of financial accountability practices in place here, and I want to just share a few of those. The staff puts together the proposed budget, like here's what we think we would need in order to do what we feel like God's calling us to do in the upcoming year. We have what we call our CA Council, which is really our elders. They are not staff members, and they then are the ones that look at that budget, and then they review it, and they're the ones that approve the spending plan, the budget plan. We run on a January to December plan, so we run on a calendar plan. No one is ever alone with any money. I'm talking from the moment it's collected to going into the safes to being counted and added into like the checks that are data processed, all of that. There's never any time where there's any one person alone with the money. Every single penny is accounted for down to the penny. Any check needs to have double signatures on it as well. And so there's double and triple accountability built all the way through. I know some churches, unfortunately, have not had the best track record with finances. And Mark and I want you to know that we're not only accountable to you, which is extremely important, but even more so, we know that we're accountable to the Lord before Him for how the finances are handled. And so we're incredibly diligent about that. All the money that is given at Christian Assembly is allocated by you into two buckets, either into the general offering, or once a month we take a kingdom offering, which is that blue bucket offering. Even if you give online, you allocate either to general or to the kingdom offering. And then from there, that money then is spent or allocated by the elders into the various different ministries. So in 2015, let me give you the general update first. In 2015, our general giving was $6.218 million, right around there. That's what happened. So we had that in 2015. So we set a 2016 giving target of $6 million. Now, you know that that's a little bit less than the $6.218 million that came in. Why would we set our budget at a little bit less? Well, the reason you set your budget at a little bit less than what came in the previous year is because stress is bad, right? We're going to talk about that. And margin is good. Little financial tip for you. Don't set your family budget to the penny where it's like, if we ever don't have a client pay or something goes on, then we're going to be homeless. That's not a good plan. You want a little bit of margin in there. So we built in a little bit of margin. In 2016, if you look at the back of your bulletin, the numbers are there. Our general giving came in at $6,386,563.24. So thank you, way to go. It went up from the previous year and it exceeded that target of $6 million. What that means is in 2017, we're now lifting our target to $6.2 million. And you will see there that that target is slightly under what just came in our general giving in 2016. Why would we put it slightly under? Well, because stress is bad and margin is good. You might be asking, well, what happens to the money that comes in that's above our target? Like, where does that extra money go? That extra money first goes into our savings, and then from there, it's allocated by our elders to various different things. For example, if you were with us in the fall, you know that we gave $1.2 million away to Julie McGowan-Boyd and the Living Room Ministries and what's going on in Africa. Part of the way we were able to do that is because we had that savings, and then we were able to give that big chunk away because of that. Some of the savings will also be allocated for capital expenses, things around the church that need to be fixed, upgrades in technology, various things like that as well. Our kingdom giving, let me tell you about that. In 2015, our kingdom giving was $498,000. And then in 2016, our kingdom giving, you guys blew me away. It jumped 17% in 1 year, our kingdom giving. Went up to $583,922.34. So almost, or a little over, $85,000 increase in our kingdom giving. Because of your increased giving to our kingdom efforts, we knew that was happening. We were able to track that throughout the year. So we started into discerning what additional ministries we could take on locally is what we felt like the Lord was saying to us. So we're in the final stages of discernment and conversation about taking on two additional local ministries. You'll hear more about that in future Kingdom Weekends once we get all the I's dotted and T's crossed on that. In addition, because of your increased giving to the Kingdom efforts, we were able to invest a little bit more into all of our existing Kingdom efforts, including in all the countries that we're involved in, as well as things like Kids Hope and other things that we're doing locally as well. So just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And would you just applaud, not Christian Assembly, we're not even really applauding ourselves. We're applauding the generosity of our God who provokes us to be generous back to Him. So we want to say thank you to God. Would you do that? Now, I know that was an earful. Thanks for sticking with me as we work through that. We're on part two of the series as we're trying to answer this question. How do we manage our resources in a way that can honor God, that God will honor and will actually change our lives? We're going to consider that, but before we do, let's pray. Lord, I thank you for your generosity to us. I thank you, Lord, for the response of literally 300 of us that said, I want to get a plan together. I want to get out of debt. I want to get serious about your will, God, for our life and the area of our resources that you've entrusted to us. Lord, thank you for the giving in 2016. Lord, it blows me away if you add the kingdom giving and general giving, just shy of $7 million was given and to your purposes. So, Lord, we thank you for that. As we come to your word now, would you speak to us about our finances and your will for us, that we wouldn't live under perpetual financial stress. God, you're such a generous God. You haven't even withheld anything from us, including your Son, so we thank you for that. Speak now, we pray, in Jesus' name, amen. Well, go ahead and grab your bulletins. If you flip them open to the center section, you'll see the scriptures that are there for you. You'll also see the teaching notes that you can fill out throughout our time together as we follow along. If you missed last weekend, or maybe this is your very first week with us, there are four big themes, four big biblical ideas that we are walking through in this series, Making Change. Now, learning experts tell us that if we say something out loud, it often helps us internalize it and memorize it more than if we just think it. So I want you to repeat the four big themes with me so that you can memorize them and internalize them and then live them out. So I want you to repeat these phrases after me with loud, strong, smiling, happy voices, right? So the first one is this, less is more. Go ahead. Second one is stress is bad. That's the one we're going to be talking about today. Next week is giving is good. And lastly, tomorrow matters. When we get to tomorrow matters, we're going to be talking about biblical foundations for investing. Last week we saw how less is more. If you missed that, go back to our website, cachurch.com, and catch that, because if you don't hear that message, it really is the foundational message for all of the rest of the messages moving forward. If you don't get in your heart and soul that less is more, you're going to have a challenge living out the other three messages that we have. Well, this week I want to focus on the biblical truth that stress is bad. I believe from the scriptures that God will free you and reduce your strain if you will listen and live by what he wants to say to you today through his word. God does not want you to live under perpetual financial stress. It's bad. As a pastor, I have people come and they'll tell me all sorts of things and anything you can imagine. But one of the things I've never heard anybody say is, the massively high rate on my credit card improved how much I worry. Before I had high credit card payments, I used to worry all the time. But now that I have really high credit card payments, I just find peace and tranquility everywhere I go. I've never heard anyone say that. I've never heard anyone say, the massively high rate on my credit card, that improved my love life. My romantic life used to be on the rocks, but, the more financial stress I had, the better my love life got. High rates equal hot love. Everything's kind of going along great now, right? I want to tell you a true story. Allison and I were dating, and we had been dating for less than a week. So I called her up, asked her out. We went on one date, second date. This is now our third date. I go to pick her up at her place, and she said, "Hey, I just need a minute." She sat down, and she was paying her credit card bill. And I noticed that she was just paying the minimum payment on her credit card bill. And so what's the guy to do in that situation on the third date, right? So I knew this might feel a little bit awkward to her, but I said, "Hey, listen, Allison, we've gone on two dates, and I really like you. So can I mention something to you? I noticed that you're about to only pay the minimum payment." This is a true story. Minimum payment on your credit card bill. Is that because you don't have the money to pay the full thing off, to pay the whole bill? And she said, "No, I actually have the whole amount, but I just thought I'd keep some in my checking, kind of as a safety net just in case." And I said, "Okay, well, before we go out, I want to sit down for a moment, and I want you to pay your whole bill right now, and here's why." And I explained how high interest rates were killing her financial future. I mean, come on, ladies, wouldn't that get you a fourth date, right? Wouldn't that make you think, like, this guy is a romance king, right? He's killing it. All I can say is that we're married now, and she said yes, so it must have worked, right? The scriptures say it this way: the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is the slave to the lender. Now, I know that word slave and slavery, that imagery is powerful imagery. But if you are in debt, the scriptures are saying that you are in slavery, and you need to become a freedom fighter to fight for your freedom with God's help. Because when you owe, you are actually in bondage to the one we owe. Now, some of you, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, "Well, Tom, listen, I think you're being a little extreme here. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. Lots of people I know have car debt. Lots of people I know have credit card debt. Lots of people I know have school loan debts, and the list goes on." Whole segments, you're thinking, of our economy are based on getting people to overspend and to live in debt. You're just making too big of a deal of it. And here's what I want to tell you. To be conformed to a sick society means you're sick. When you look around the society at large and you think, man, there's a lot of sickness in our society, and you conform yourself to the things you see in society, that means you are becoming sick as well. Also, I would say this, not everyone lives like that. I know people who have no debt, no car debt, no school debt, no credit card debt, even no mortgage debt, and these people don't live in Nebraska. They live here in Southern California. Here's the true story about every single one of them, and let me say every single one of you who are debt-free, because many of you talked to me about that and told me your story after last week. When I listened to their story, they had to choose at some point to believe that it was possible with God's help to get there. And once they got to that point, they had to believe that it would be a really, really good thing for them to be debt-free. This week I had a young couple who is part of our church. In fact, I saw them this morning. He's an actor, she's a teacher. And in 2007, they were $30,000 in student debt, card debt, and credit card debt. So they had $30,000 in debt. And they said, as they were telling me their story, that they had been driving their financial lives asleep at the wheel. But they learned the biblical principles of management, finance management, taught by Financial Peace University, and 4 years later, they were debt-free. 4 years later, they were debt-free. And here's what the husband said. He said, debt equaled bondage in our lives, and today we can say that we have been set free. And it's not just them. Another couple messaged me this week who's part of our church, and they said that in 2014, they were $72,000 in debt. And as a family, not as an individual, but as a family, they were earning $58,000 a year. They were $72,000 in debt with a $58,000 income for their family. But they became convicted that God wanted them to get out of debt. So they learned and committed to a biblical plan. And in August of 2016, about 26 months later, they became debt-free. They became debt-free from $72,000 to debt-free. And they were earning $58,000 a year whenever they made that turn, when they turned that corner as a family. Imagine, if you will, what it would be like to live a life completely free of financial stress. Think about it for a moment. Maybe you go home and something breaks in your apartment or in your house, and you don't have to be stressed about it because you have an emergency fund and you can pay for it to get it fixed. Or imagine you know someone who's in need, and instead of you just kind of saying, well, gee, I hope someone can help you, or I really wish I could help you, you're able to say, we can do this, I can do this, I can help, because I have the financial freedom to do that without going into greater debt. Imagine your boss gives you a couple weeks off for vacation, and your biggest stress, your biggest problem is, where should we go? Should we go to the mountains or to the beach? That's your biggest challenge. Why? You have options. Why do you have options? Because you have cash saved up ready to go to pay for the trip, and you won't take on debt in order to make that trip a reality. And why do you have that cash? Because you aren't paying all the interest costs that every other person seems to be paying each year. Now listen, if the practical side of this doesn't motivate you, I'm hoping that the spiritual side of it will. Jesus once said it this way, if you are faithful with little, then you can be entrusted with more. In my heart of hearts, I hope and pray that every single one of you, even if you feel helpless, even if you feel hopeless, I'm hoping that you'll catch a little bit of divine inspiration that will motivate you to believe that it's possible for you to get out of debt and move from fear to freedom in your finances. Why? Because less is more, stress is bad, giving is good, and tomorrow matters. So what I want to do with the remaining time that we have together this morning is I want to give you three short prayers to pray to God that will help you in your pursuit of moving from fear to freedom in your finances. We learned in our last series that short prayers are powerful prayers. You don't need to turn these into long prayers. They can be short prayers that you weave throughout your day. So I want these to be kind of integrated into our lives. I'm integrating them into my life. I invite you to do that as well. The very first prayer is this: God, give me self-control. Will you repeat that prayer out loud right now? God, give me self-control. Why is this so important? Without self-control, you will not be able to move towards financial freedom and out of debt. Proverbs 25:28 says this: like a city whose walls are broken down is a person who lacks self-control. Now, in those days when proverb was originally written, if you lived in a city without walls around it, you were incredibly vulnerable to being attacked and then taken, carried off into slavery. Likewise, today, if you don't set up some protective walls around your financial life today, you are vulnerable to the lies, to the attacks, to the swings of your emotions, and to the worldliness that will lead you into a life of financial slavery. I'm 42 years old, but I have a little secret confession that I need to make to you. I'm 42 years old, but I have a 2-year-old version of me living inside of me. And we've all seen a 2-year-old kid in the grocery store who sees a toy or a candy bar that they want. And what does the 2-year-old kid begin to do? They begin to say, "I want it, I want it, I want it." And they throw a temper tantrum until they get it. Now, here's the secret that I know about you. I don't think I'm the only one with a 2-year-old version of me living inside of me. I think you have a 2-year-old version of you living inside of you. But you can't let the 2-year-old version of you control, in my case, the 42-year-old version of me when it comes to my finances. So I have to pray and say, God, give me self-control. Give me control over the 2-year-old version of me so that it doesn't control the adult version of me. Now, part of this is learning your spending triggers and spending patterns. You need to learn when the 2-year-old version of you tends to act up. Some of you, you like to shop, and every time you walk by a clearance rack, you think you're getting a really great deal because you're getting 40% off something that has been marked up 70% before they took it 40% off. You're like, I got it 40% off, right? Or maybe you did get a really good deal, but you got a really good deal on something you really don't need. And so you spent the money because you're getting a good deal on something you really don't need. And then eventually it'll sit in your closets, and then you'll hear a talk about how less is more, and you'll give it away. Some of you, you need to know that your 2-year-old tends to nickel and dime you and your way into bondage. For example, I know a bunch of us like to go to 4 Bucks all the time, right? Every time you walk into 4 Bucks, you're like, what's 4 Bucks? They have a green mermaid as their logo. You walk into 4 Bucks and you're dropping 4 Bucks for a cup of coffee that should cost you $1 every time. You go in and you do that. You nickel and dime yourself to death. You go to the grocery store and you think, I have to have name brand cereal. I have to have that. I have to eat out every single day at $15 every time I eat out. Some of you have 95 gigs of data on your phone, and you don't even know how many gigs you actually used last month, but you're paying for 95 gigs because it was a really good deal whenever you got your phone to get the 95 gig plan. Some of you can literally save money by lowering the amount of data you have on your phone. Some of you have an ever-rising cable bill, and what you think is, oh yeah, it's just going to be set. Oh, I locked my price in for 2 years. It's not going to change at all. The person guaranteed it to me. They gave me their name. You call them 2 months later whenever they raise your cable bill. They're like, he doesn't work here anymore. We've never heard of that person. The fees are going up. All of it's going up. And then you sit there late at night, you flip on cable, and you look through 3,000 channels that you're paying for, and you're overwhelmed, and you don't watch anything, and you say, honey, there's really nothing on right now, but you're paying $75 out the door to watch nothing but a list of shows that you really don't even want to see. Some of you nickel and dime your way into financial bondage. But others of you, the 2-year-old version of you, doesn't do it that way. The 2-year-old version of you sinks your financial ship all at once. I think guys can kind of tend to be like this a little bit more. So guys like, hey, listen, I bought a boat. We're in a drought. There's no water in the lakes, but I bought a boat. And I got a boat. And now I need a really big truck with a Hemi to pull the boat that I got. It's got to be a big truck to handle the big boat that I got. The big boat that I got that's going to sit in my driveway 360 days a year. That's what I need the big truck for. And, oh, you know, better yet, I don't really want it in my driveway. So I need to rent a big storage facility for my big boat that I now have. Let me, a little tip for you on that. It's cheaper for you to rent a boat for the 5 days a year that you actually want to be out on the water, right? Some of you, you blow it all at once. You're like, I've been working hard. I deserve a boat. I'm going to go get a boat. And then you get a boat, and then you realize, wow, that wasn't really the best decision because now I'm paying to store it somewhere, and I don't use it as much as I thought, and I could have had the same experience by renting a boat and let somebody else pay for it and store it. God, give us self-control. God, give us self-control. Jesus once said it this way, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, because life does not consist in the abundance of your possessions. When Alice and I were first married, we had a really sweet ride, a really sweet car. It was the envy of every person I knew at the time. It was a 5-year-old Plymouth Sundance. Now, you maybe have never heard of a Plymouth Sundance because they only made them 7 years before they stopped making them because they were that great of a car to have. Here's what was sweet about my 5-year-old Plymouth Sundance. I bought it cash when I was 22 from the earnings of summer jobs that I had throughout high school and college. And so then we made a commitment that we would not buy another car until we had saved enough to buy that future used car cash. So we drove that Plymouth Sundance for 6 more years until it was 11, almost 12 years old. Let me just tell you that an 11-year-old Plymouth Sundance ain't like an 11-year-old Honda Accord. 6 years of pretending like I had a car payment when I didn't. 6 years of not only not paying the interest on a car loan, but putting the money into an account where now interest was working for me and not against me. And by the end, it was rough. By the end, the windows had the kind of crank windows. Some of you will remember those, right? Crank windows. But my crank didn't work very well, so I had to grab the window and pull it up and crank. And I have fat fingers, so what that means is at the top, there was always a crack. And I lived where it rained a lot at the time, and so there was always kind of like an inch where the rain would come in, and I'd always like drive like this. Not because I was trying to be like urban, hip, and cool or something, but because I was trying to avoid the rain coming in on the side. People would get into my car. I was a youth pastor at the time. Students would get in my car, and they would kind of duck because the interior fabric was hanging down. The only thing holding it up was the center light piece that was holding it up. It looked like a tent without any tent poles. That was kind of what was going on in there. It was so bad at the end, this is true, I'm not making this up, that my gas gauge stopped working. And so I went to see how much is it to get it fixed, and it was like way too much money to get it fixed for the type of car it was. So I just started using my odometer to guesstimate how many miles I had left to drive until I would run out of gas. It was that bad. It was really not that great. But here's the thing. 6 years of saying no to my inner 2-year-old. 6 years of comments from students that would say, you need to get a nicer car. Like, you need to do better for your wife. What's wrong with you? They'd come pick me up in their car. That's like, I'm getting in their new Mercedes. They're like, Dad bought me this. And I'm like, well, my dad didn't buy me a Mercedes, you little snot, you know? And so, did I say that? Are we allowed to say that? You know when it's fun to say no to yourself? It's fun to say no to yourself for a little while when you know that it means you will be able to say yes to yourself for the rest of your life without going into debt. Here's what happened. 6 years of saying no to ourselves has meant that we've been able to say yes to ourselves, buying every other car we've ever had cash. No car debt, no car loan interest payments ever again. And by the way, you want to know what will make you a really, really great car negotiator? If you sell cars for a living, plug your ears for this little tip I'm about to give away, is whenever you have cash. Because when they say, well, it's just a little bit more for the monthly payment, you could get that upgrade, you could get that. You need heat seaters, you need all these. I live in Southern California, I don't need heat seaters, right? And so, yeah, you don't need them, it's okay. Like, you will survive to make it to your place, right? You just say, this is what I've got. And what's amazing is whenever you walk in and you say, this is what I got, it's amazing how the price of the car will come down to what you have. And I'm not even really that great of a negotiator. It's just, this is what I got. This is what I have. And so because of that, I think God has allowed us to get cars at a little bit better deal because we've been paying cash along the way. You might need to figure out how to have self-control for a little while to empower yourself to live differently the rest of your life. You might need to say no to that $4 cup of coffee and drink store brand made coffee at home so that one day you can drink all the coffee you want without going into debt. I like coffee. But the very best cup of coffee I've had was not a scaled ratio pour over coffee. It was not a nitrogen infused cold brew on tap coffee. It was a pour over that I sat drinking without any car debt, without any credit card debt, without any school debt. And true confession, I do still have some mortgage debt, but I'm working on slaying that dragon as well with God's help. Prayer number one to move from financial fear to freedom is, God, give me self-control. And so this week, whenever you're tempted to splurge, just, God, give me self-control. The second prayer is this, God, give me understanding. Will you say that prayer out loud with me right now? God, give me understanding. You've probably heard the old saying, what you don't know won't hurt you. Well, that's a complete lie, and it's not true. Some of us just don't understand how numbers and debts work against you. In fact, Hosea 4:6 is really clear on this. This is what God says. He says, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Notice it doesn't say my people are destroyed for a lack of faith. It says my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. What you don't know can hurt you and load you up with financial stress. I made a slide I want you to look at of the people who in America have credit card debt that is carryover debt, meaning that I'm not talking about the people who use a credit card then pay it all off at the end of the month. I'm talking about the people who have revolving debt, meaning it goes from cycle to cycle. That's when they charge you the interest. The average American has $16,000 in credit card debt. The average credit card company right now is charging us 17% interest. That's crazy. Now, if you had $16,000 worth of credit card debt paid off at 17% interest and you paid it off at $250 a month, you would be paying it off for 14 years. You'd be paying it off for 169 months. And oh, by the way, it would cost you $42,000 to pay off the $16,000 that you borrowed. Now, I want to remove a little bit of shame that some of you might be feeling right now if you've got a lot of debt. Here's the challenge. A lot of people don't understand how money works. And why is that? Well, where do you learn about it? I went through middle school, high school, college, and graduate school and never once was required to take a class on how money works. And a lot of us, we had great parents. I had great parents, but those parents, sometimes they don't know how money works, so they can't pass that knowledge on to you as their child because they didn't really understand it themselves. And here's how a lot of us learn about money: by making mistakes. And then you get to be an adult, and the truth is, so many of us, we're embarrassed by what we don't understand. We feel overwhelmed. It's a little dark secret, and we just want to put our heads in the sand and pretend like this isn't going on. We feel helpless, and we feel hopeless, and we don't know where to begin. And if that's you, this series is God's call to you, God's grace to you, to begin to learn biblical principles of money management to get you out of the debt trap. Now, let me flip the script on that same $16,000 of credit card debt. And let's say you didn't have that debt because you learned less is more, so you learned within your means. So take a look at the slide. If you took that same $250 a month, so it's the exact same budget, $250 a month, and you had the same amount of the 14 years, that's how long it took to pay the debt off. And let's say you got 7% interest, which is the historical norm of the S&P 500, the stock market, depending on how you exactly calculate it. But 7% is roughly the historical norm. With that same monthly budget for 169 months, instead of ending with zero, you would end with $71,000 in your account. That's with you having the exact same budget. Not talking about you doing more, just talking about you doing different. Now, let's say, for example, that you didn't have $16,000 in debt, but you actually saved $16,000 and you had that as your initial investment, and then you added $250 a month for 169 months at 7% interest, you would end up with $114,000 in your account. And let's say you got really crazy. Let's say you're young. I know some of you are young. You're 25-ish, let's say. And let's say you kept it up for 40 years. You had $16,000 to start, but instead of being at $250 a month, you bumped it up to $285. You got radical. $285 a month going into your investment account. You got 7% interest. You left it in there for 40 years. If you did that, you'd have a bit over $1 million in your account. The borrower is a slave to the lender. God's people are destroyed by a lack of knowledge. If you are in debt and you don't understand how money works, or even if you're out of debt but you don't understand how to make money work for you, and you are beginning to feel a tug, I need to get my financial house in order, then I beg you to take Financial Peace University. I beg you as your pastor to do that. I already shared that 300 of you signed up and jumped in, so many that we decided we had to start a second class. And so if you missed last week, maybe this is your first week here, maybe you're out of town, whatever. Maybe you are here and you just got lazy, you got busy, you sat on the fence, whatever it is. We've decided to add a second Financial Peace class that is going to start on Thursday, March 2nd at 7 p.m. Now here's the deal. You can go online, look in your bulletin, it's listed there for you how to do it. Go online and register, because then they'll send you the materials and you'll have all the materials you need so that when Thursday, March 2nd comes, you come with all your materials ready to go. That's about 3 weeks from now, and so you have plenty of time to reorganize your schedule, get childcare, get that all figured out. Now, somebody asked me last night, they're like, hey, does the $50 deal still apply for the class on March 2nd? Yes, if you sign up in this series and you're part of CA, you take Financial Peace with us, you pay the $100 to register, CA doesn't get any of that money. It all goes to Financial Peace University and the organization that runs that. If you do that and complete the class, at the end of the class, we will mail you a $50 check so we can partner with you in order for you to get the knowledge and understanding that you need. You do not have time to not gain the financial knowledge that you need. We're doing this because we see that people are destroyed from a lack of knowledge. God doesn't want you to be one of those people. That's why you're here right now. But you must get the knowledge that you lack. Brings us to the third and final prayer, which is this. God, give me a plan. Would you say that prayer out loud with me right now? God, give me a plan. Proverbs 21:5 says this, "The plans of the diligent lead to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty." The plans of the faithful, the diligent, and the intentional lead to profit. If you have a diligent, wise, biblical plan to manage the resources that God entrusts you, you will get ahead. In fact, I mentioned it last week, the average Financial Peace University student, at the end of the class, they begin to implement what they've learned. 90 days later, the average student has an $8,000 turnaround in their finances. How did that happen? 2.7 million people on average having an $8,000 turnaround in their finances. They paid down $5,300 of debt, $2,700 in increased savings. How did that happen? All 2.7 million people didn't get a raise. You know what all 2.7 million people got? They got a plan. They got a plan, and they stuck with a plan. The plan of the diligent leads to profit as surely as haste leads to poverty. Somebody asked me one time, they said, Tom, what does that word haste mean? Well, it's an interesting word study in the Hebrew. In the Hebrew, the word translated there as haste means I felt sad, so I went shopping. That's what it means. I'm just kidding. It doesn't mean that. But that's what a lot of us do, right? We feel sad, and so we go into shopping therapy, and then we end into debt. You need to have a plan. And that means you need to slow down and invest the time to be diligent and knowledgeable to create a plan that God will honor and that will honor God. and you will see change come in to your life. Here's the truth, gang. You can wander into debt, but you will not wander out of it. You can mistake your way into debt, but you will not mistake your way out of it. You can stumble your way into debt, but you will not stumble your way out of it. God, give me a knowledgeable, diligent plan that honors you and that you will be delighted to honor. Can I have the worship leaders come up on both sides as we pray? Listen, I know many of you are completely debt-free, and I just want to say, way to go. Way to go. And if that's you, might you just feel a sense of gratitude to God that you're not trapped in financial slavery. Now listen, if that is you, I don't want you to brag about it, but I do want you in our life groups, in our interactions, I want you to speak up about it, because the more you speak up about it, the more you dismantle the lie that, well, everybody's in debt, everybody's living this way. It's only like the really radical people that can live out of debt. I want you to share that it's possible. Don't just come up and tell me. I want you to share with others in a hopeful way and an encouraging way that they too can experience that as they work it out with God. Those of you who are in debt, maybe right now, just a prayer you need to say to God is, God, would you give me self-control? Maybe right now, with God's help, just take an inventory of your life. Where do you need to tell your inner two-year-old no? Maybe you need to implement a spending freeze. Maybe when you go to the grocery store, you need to choose generic. Maybe you need to pack your lunch. Maybe you need to sell some of the stuff that you own to pay off the debt that you had to acquire it. Maybe you need to say, you know what, I'm not going to buy any new clothes for 2 years. Maybe you need to make coffee at home or drive your current car until you've saved enough cash to buy the next one. Getting out of debt begins with self-control. You can do it and God will help. Less is more. Or maybe your prayer is that you need to pray, God, give me understanding. To be a faithful manager of what God has entrusted to you, you have to gain an understanding of the biblical principles of money management. God doesn't want you to be destroyed because of a lack of knowledge. This series, this 4 weekends in a row, it only scratches the surface. That's why I'm calling every single one of you to take Financial Peace University, where you'll get a deeper understanding and you'll be able to create a plan. Some of you right now, you need to look at your bulletin and circle it and say, I'm going to sign up today to be part of that next Financial Peace class. And lastly, God, give us a plan. Some of you, you might be thinking, I know, you're thinking, it's too late for me. Don't believe that lie. Start right where you are. Commit and say, I'm going to begin saying no to myself now so I can say yes to myself for the rest of my life. And then when you're out of debt, when you have a plan that includes giving built into the plan, then you can drink all the $4 coffees you want so long as it doesn't put you back into debt. And some of you are young. And you're thinking this, well, I'll figure this out when I'm in my 40s and 50s. I don't want to worry about it now. Don't believe that lie. Start right where you are. Compounding interest works best when you have a lot of time ahead of you. I was pretty Spartan in my teens and 20s, but that self-control has led to greater freedom in my 40s. And now my prayer is, God, would you give me a plan in my 40s so that I could have even greater freedom in my 60s if you would let me live that long, Lord. Less is more. Stress is bad. Giving is good. Tomorrow matters. Less is more. Stress is bad. Giving is good. Tomorrow matters. The clock is ticking. Don't wait. God will help. Amen.